This is Live in the Studio with G2. The show where we talk about the music we love to listen to and play. From time to time, we will have friends pop in and tell us their story, inspired by their musical journey and experience. Relax, enjoy, and subscribe.
In this episode, we continue our discussion of the Beatles. So we're going to move up a couple of years.
We're going to go with...
Ticket to Ride.
Let's we're now in 1965.
We're now in 1965. I am 1 year old.
I'm not even a thought. this song came from the Help album.
Help? Everybody knows the Help album.
Yeah.
Good album.
Very, very popular.
Still in that four-piece band mode.
Yeah, they're still in that, kind of Ed Sullivan show kind of thing.
Alley four-piece.
Still got the bowl cuts for the most part. Yeah. A little bit longer, a little bit more shaggy, but they still got the suits. They're all looking like uniform together, and they still got this sound, but it's a little bit heavier.
Yeah.
A little bit heavier. And actually, the song, which I thought was interesting, was that there was a critic.
Ticket to Ride, you're talking about?
Yeah, Ticket to Ride is a song, which actually peaked at number one. It was the Beatles' seventh consecutive number one hit in the UK and third consecutive number one hit in the United States at this point.
Aha, okay.
So it was, they were picking up steam. but actually, a critic actually said that Ticket to Ride might be considered the first ever heavy metal song.
Now that's a current day critic or at that time?
No,
currently now he's looking at the music.
Not
style.
Sure if that critic was on LSD when he said that.
Probably
but he.
I never really thought of Ticket to Ride as a heavy metal song.
No, but I get what he's trying to say. I think he's I think he's making a stretch.
Yeah.
But I get what he's saying. He's saying because that album, Help album in general, was a little bit more heavier. Ticket to Ride at the time. And now we do it a little bit differently. We do it, I think, a little bit slower.
It's
a little bit of different tone.
I think it's a little jazzier.
Yeah. In a little bit. I think it also has some 90s alternative kind of effect into it. But what
I was going to say modernized a little bit, but more 90s modernized.
No, not early thousands, like 90s. You know, kind of Google Dolls, kind of Matchbox 20 kind of little things thrown in there. But I think what the guy was trying to say is that this song, compared to the other songs that have been out at that time in that genre, weren't as heavy. So it's, they're starting to get more of what we would consider as being rock, mainstream rock, not rockabilly, not R&B.
Right.
Which is rhythm and blues, or even, bebop jazz, which was really big at this time because that's when the revival in San Francisco started to happen and everything. So,
it was a change.
It was a heavier, it was a rough, it was raw, and it just changed a lot of things, as we will see.
Now, and again, in our version, though, it's not quite as heavy.
No, it's not. It's a little bit more jazzy, a little bit more laid back.
Yeah.
We
do some things a little different with the vocals.
Yes.
With the notes the vocals hit. And, of course, on most all our songs, when we put them together, when we do our covers, we arrange them a little differently. You don't really ever want to take a song that you're covering and... If you're a musician, if you're a band, you want to kind of put your little feel on it. You want to make it your own style, if you will. You don't really want to be a radio playing the same song because, people have heard that. So,
well, it's good to pay homage to the certain things that people want to listen to when you do a cover. But I always thought, and this is just my personal opinion, that if you're going to do the song or do the cover exactly note for note, inflection by inflection, tone to tone, as the artist on the record, then what's the point in you playing it?
You're
a jukebox. I mean, yes, you need to play certain things. You can't do a beat, a Ticket to Ride. You can't do it and make it, change notes.
Yeah.
But if you do it to where it captures the spirit. But it's a little bit different. Not saying that, this is my song now, because, but this is my interpretation of it.
I think it was Eric Clapton that said every at all his concerts, when he would play, his songs were a little different each time.
That's right.
His own songs, he would play a little different. He said, so if his audience was coming to hear the album version or the radio version, they were going to be disappointed.
That's true.
Because he really didn't know how it was going to come out the night of the concert.
Well, you know, and I think every musician, any musician that I think that's worth salt has gone through that, because, you know, things happen. You get bored if you play that song on tour. There's that. And also, sometimes you forget things.
Right.
You know, we all suffer from that. I have to make a lot of notes, but it's...
I think it's more so the... You need to freshen it up for yourself.
Yeah, you need to freshen it up. I think that's more of it. But also, you know, they wrote that song and recorded it in the studio, mm-hmm. and that's how they wanted the sound at that moment.
Right.
That doesn't mean that's how they always wanted the sound.
Right. And in a lot of cases, and I was telling somebody this the other day about recording in a studio, you know, in a lot of cases, bands will write the rough draft of a song. They'll go into the studio and they'll work everything out in the studio as they're recording it, and then it'll come up with a song. So it's contingent on their feeling of that day, what they're putting down on paper, their engineer, their producers, the sound that they're getting that day. And then once they get something that they can release, then they kind of have to go back and relearn it so they can perform it live. Whereas, you know, a lot of the garage bands or independent bands, when you go into studio, it's money. And so you've got to practice, have your stuff ready to record. So it's a little bit different.
Yeah. And also the room's different. You know, when you're in a studio, you know, things are designed for you to record. Now, back in the Beatles days, not every studio was like that.
No.
But they had certain things that were built a certain way to get those acoustics right for what they needed for their microphones and all their equipment and everything. But, you know...
I had the chance to go to Sun Studio up in Memphis. Holy cow.
No, you didn't bring me.
I'm sorry. We'll go back.
I didn't get to go.
No, we'll go back. But it's an eye-opener for the time period. You know, everything's analog at that time.
Oh, yeah.
It's what they did in those studios back in those days, you can do in your apartment on a computer better today. And that's what's weird to me. But the setup, tile floors, acoustic tile on the wall, just absorb some sound. You know, it was very basic. Everything was taped.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one shot. If you screwed it up, you had to go back and re-record.
Yeah. That's more money.
Yeah. Oh, hours and hours of work just to get that going.
You know, it's funny to me, but with how things have changed so much.
Yeah.
And how, you know, we can record this whole thing.
Yeah.
And in our little studio room.
Right here. You're seeing it. if you're looking at the video, you're seeing this.
And you know, in the past it was... You know, it wasn't even thought of that it could be done like this.
This was a major studio, and in past, this is beyond state of the art.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's really, really crazy how technology is. And that's what I said earlier. I like technology. I love the fact that you can do that here, that you don't need to actually go into a huge studio and spend hours upon hours, you know, working through all that stuff. You can do something pretty decent here, as we'll show you in a couple of minutes.
Exactly. You know, you can do a lot of things if you have the time, the passion.
Yep.
And you don't necessarily need the money. When you start talking about that, you're talking about maybe getting a better quality of mastering.
Sure.
But as far as getting a decent recording that showcases your talent and what you're interested in, what you're passionate about, it can be done. I think anybody can do it.
Yes.
Everybody has the potential to be a good musician.
Right. And you have to have that desire.
Absolutely. The desire is the biggest part. But you don't always have to worry about them. Go back to what Eric Clapton said. You don't have to worry about it sounding the same every time and expecting that people want it to sound the same every time. I mean, you know, you look at any jazz artist.
Right.
Their performance hardly ever sounds the same every time.
I know. And that's what I love about jazz. And I was talking about that, which we'll get into in a little bit. Once we come back, let's do Ticket to Ride.
Ticket to Ride.
Everybody, this is Ticket to Ride, 1965 Beatles, covered by G2 here in our studio.
Enjoy.
Ticket to Ride. which I think drives something right by me.
Ticket to Ride. What do you think? How did it come out?
I think it came out really good. And I think, though, as listening to it, we have done that slower.
Yeah, a little bit.
But no, I think it's good. It's different, but I feel it still has that same tone. The problem with the Beatles, well, I wouldn't really say that it's a problem. It's just maybe I don't have as high of a voice as, you know, as John Lennon or Paul McCartney did at that time. So, you know, sometimes some of the recordings that, you know, when we listen to a song, sometimes it's hard to hit those notes and for it to sound good.
Right.
Some of the other Beatles songs that we do, like Hard Day's Night and stuff like that, and Can't Buy Me Love, you know, that's at the end of the performance when we do a gig. It might get a little crazy.
For those of y'all wondering what we're talking about, we have an entire set that's nothing but Beatles. And depending on where we're playing, who we're playing to, and when we're playing, we will do that entire Beatles set, which is about 12, 13 songs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if it's the last set of the evening, it could be a little tasking. Some of the early, you know, Hard Day's Night, it's a little tasking vocally by the end of the night. So, you know, it's always a challenge. But in any case, I thought Ticket to Ride came out good. I like the fact you said that, you know, we have played that slower. I like the fact that we can play it slower and it still sounds good. And we can play it at this speed and it still sounds good. I enjoy that because, again, if we're at the end of a set and we're throwing this song in there and we're tired, you know, we can get away with playing it a little bit slower and still have it sound good.
No, so, I agree. It's nice to have those areas of wiggle room.
Yeah.
In the songs that you're doing. And that is why it's so important to not necessarily do the song exactly like
right.
it's written.
Right.
Because then you're holding yourself to a specific map.
Right, and for all you musicians out there that played live venues, keep that in mind. You know, you got to allow yourself a little wiggle room to sub songs in and out of your set depending on where you are.
Exactly. You might get about, you know, a couple seconds into a song, and then you start looking at the crowd, they're not digging it as much as you thought they were.
Right.
So you need to kind of do a segue and then go into something else.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. You know, they may love it, and they don't want you to end it, and you know, so you gotta have a little bit of space to look at the crowd, and that's so important. That's a hard thing too, to be able to look at your set and sing and play your music and everything, and then try to scan on the crowd and see what they're looking to, because that's instant gratification right there.
Yeah, I always worry about the one guy out there who's going to yell out Freebird. I hate
that has happened though.
It's happened.
I think they do it just to do it. I don't know if they actually want to hear it, but it's I have nightmares of that.
You know, we try not to be a radio station out there in a live performance.
Don't tell DJ Request what to play.
Some people, you know, play my favorite song, and we may not know your favorite song, but we, you know, we'll do our best. But
we try to keep a stock of of all types of songs and hits from all different areas. And yeah, genres, well, I mean, just to have something, you know, that everyone would listen to, would like to listen to, you know, enjoy.
This is the mid-60s. This is 65, mm-hmm. Ticket to Ride. I mean, it's, you know, we go back further than a lot of groups. It's, I like doing that. I don't know how you feel, but I like doing older stuff with a newer twist on it, with a jazzier twist, an updated twist, than trying to play all the popular songs of the day.
No, I like that. I like doing that because the further you go back, the less chance you're going to have someone feel like they just heard that on the radio.
Yeah, that's right.
They know the song. That, right. You know, especially if it was a hit, they know the song. But you also have to be very careful because if it's a song that's really popular, they're going to expect you to do certain things.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, you know, there's certain things you just don't do. Like, we would never play Tom Sawyer by Rush.
No.
You know, just certain things you just don't do. But, you know, reaching back,
it's not
back,
in our wheelhouse
though,
anyway.
No, it's not really, no. The feet organ, I just don't.
Yeah, you know,
get into that.
You don't never.